So last week we had a little bit of a problem with our Zoom recording, and it affect what?
You shifted your
Which
laptop. The screen's gone.
screen's gone? Well, good. Should be back. Is it back?
Deja vu all over again.
Yeah, right. I don't know. Something's going on here. I don't think anybody wants me to teach this lesson. Is it back on you?
You haven't been adjusting your tablet.
Yeah, I think it probably wiggled loose up here somehow. I will not touch it. I'll get it back up there. Are these things, it's plugged in.
So
No, that's a different one.
It's plugged in. Still not up. It should come up. Yeah, turn these off and back on. From right here on the side. Okay, so let me just talk while we're doing that. I don't know what happened last week. I refreshed all the software on my system, and also the new Zoom package that's out. So we'll see. It's working here. It hasn't gone offline, I don't think. I still see everybody online, so. We'll try to get it back up. I don't know what's going on with it. It's going to be irritating if it doesn't work. Nothing.
Anything on your laptop screen?
Let me do this. Let me go back.
Can we unplug the thing?
Well, we can unplug it here and try to plug it back in. Oh, this thing's off. No, it's not.
It's on.
Okay.
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 Don't
I'm not
move.
touching it. Not gonna touch
Don't
it.
move.
Not gonna touch it.
Next,
Is this one
my
on?
next app. Who's paying up there?
So are we on? Everything's on? Okay, good. Well, that's at least it happened at the very beginning. So hopefully it stays this way. You wouldn't recognize it probably, but if fingers away from it, not going to touch it. The recording's on. When it goes off, let me just make sure the recording's on, but I believe it is.
Remember how you used to have to hold the rabbit ear in
It's
there?
on.
Okay, good. Thank you. Yep, it's on. So hopefully we'll get this. We've got a lot to do today. I want to try to get through it as best I can. So I'm going to shorten the Israel and other discussion I have quite a bit, because I do want to get back to where we left off last week. I re-recorded, didn't re-record, but I caught most of the recording and I put it up on the website, but the first few minutes of it were not there. So most of the lesson's there. So I'll kind of redo some of that as we go today. But this is our schedule. We're going to do Genesis 1b today. We'll have several in Genesis before we're done. I'm doing Manor Lake on Tuesday, Daniel chapter 4. You can kind of see where we're going to be here. Of course, Thanksgiving. And then on the 8th, we'll be gone, and Carol will be teaching that day. And then we'll be back on the 15th. So we'll be back in Genesis, however far we get. I suspect we will finish chapter 1. If not next week, we'll finish it the week after, and we'll get to chapter 2. So this is kind of what our plan is. Okay. So Middle East, let me just, you can read the chart, but I'll speak to this more than anything else. Hostage negotiations do not seem to be going anywhere. And I'm not sure why that is. And I don't think anybody's sure why that is. But Israel is finishing up stuff in Gaza. They're going back in areas where they cleaned out before, and find that Hamas has reconstituted itself, and they're taking them out, plus the rocket launcher. So they're down to a mop-up right now. All the new countries, or all the countries over there, are kind of adjusting to the fact that Biden is going to be out and Trump is going to be in. And there's a number of things that are positive there. We talked about them last week. A lot of posturing going on. Turkey's declared that they're cutting all ties with Israel. Saudi Arabia is making statements about Palestinian rights, which is curious because they never really cared one way or the other before. But I think what they're trying to do is they're trying to appear to be, until Trump gets back in office and they get some security guarantees, they're trying to play both sides against the middle right now. So we'll see how that all works out. Israel is, of course, preparing also, which is a positive. In the U.S., of course, a lot of Trump cabinet picks are being done, and that's causing a huge stir, you know, just the pot stirring. This new DOGE, or whatever they call it, Department of Government Efficiency, the deep state is panicking because they know that many of them and their whole agencies may be on the chopping block pretty soon, and that's kind of interesting. I do think that we're going to see a lot of last-minute flurries to try to, for example, Congress is, while it's still under Democrat control, they're going to try to spend all the money that they've allocated for Ukraine so it can't be taken away. So they're kind of trying to stop a lot of things that might happen in the new administration. So just watch for that. But once he gets in office, and once the new press secretary is there, and once the people take their offices, you know, buy a big box of popcorn because it's going to be interesting. It's going to be a show, and I'm kind of looking forward to it. So that's all I want to talk about. I do want to cover a few things that I did last week, just to be get them on the record with audio. You know, Genesis starts within the beginning, and that's really the name that the Jews use for this book, Bereshit, which is in the beginning, and it's all about a start, an origin, a first time event. And all of that is part of what this book is. And we've talked about a number of things. And what I want to just reinforce, we're going to take time in chapter one, because chapter one is not only the first book in the Bible and the first book in Genesis, but it's a foundational book for everything we understand and believe about what comes after it. So it's really important for us to understand what's there, why it's there, what it means. And that way it clarifies as we have issues come up in our life or in our spiritual life or with our friends, comments that people make, we'll have a biblical way to think about those. And verse 1:1 is the critical verse. My often point is if you don't accept the first four words of the Old Testament, you're going to have a hard time with the Bible. And that's in the beginning, God created. And maybe it said 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Is that five created? Five words. So in the beginning, God. Many people have trouble with thinking God is pre-existent, was here before anything else. We talked about that. And we talked about God creating. And those things are really foundational. And that's why they're in this first verse of the Bible. And the corollary to that is really, if you don't believe that, then many of the things that you are asked to believe later on, you know, the walking on the water, the raising Lazarus from the tomb, the flood in Noah's time, the whole, many of the Old Testament things, or even the miracles, you'll have a hard time with because you're trying to place them in a human context, and you simply can't do that. It's a God context. And when God says he can do something, he can, and he does. And we just, as Christians, have to believe that. And I think that's really important for us. All of these things, I won't go over them again, but all of these things are answered in the book of Genesis. And it's really important because when people say, where did evil come from? Where did tribes come from? Where did religion come from? Man and wife, marriage, all of these things are instituted in the book of Genesis. So it's important to do it. We don't get this detail in any other, I mean, you may get it in some book that somebody writes with their own opinion, but you don't get it in a book like the Bible, which is God's breathed word. So it's real important. This is the only place we get it. You don't get it in a science book either, because most of the things of God, they don't even, you don't even want to talk to.
Yeah.
Yes.
a lot of the verbiage of the past of the Genesis, I think the difference is every single word carefully ordered, every preface that she has it does in every single word to lay out in that order of when things have many communities, many communities.
Yes, absolutely right. Absolutely right. You're talking about Morris, the book.
Yeah,
yeah I'll just say to you, if you are interested in this at a very detailed level, buy the book that we're both talking about here, because he goes, I'm not going to cover that detail, because it's really, we'd be here for 2 years going through it, and I'm going to cover it from a higher level. But the point is valid, because if you use the King James Version, every verse starts with "and." If you use the NIV, most start with and some start with another preposition, but all of them are connected to the verse before. So it tells you the sequence of things that happen. And it's real important to understand that, because when you get into studying the Bible, what things come first is pretty important when you're trying to understand how it was all done. So if you believe Genesis and you understand it, it also puts to rest a lot of the worldly notions, again, atheism, pantheism, polytheism, humanism, evolutionism. All these isms have a couple of things in common. One is they believe the earth was created without any god, or multiple gods in the case of some, like pantheism or polytheism. So, or humanism, which believes we're our own god and we didn't have any help, we just sort of amorphized and now we're evolving like every other creature. So all of these things in Genesis, you understand innately, are not true, because you understand what is true. And that's critical. I talk about definitions. The only one I want to focus on here, well, I'll focus on both of them. The word God here is Elohim, and it's a plural word. Yeah. The word created here in Genesis, the first part of Genesis, is the word bara, B-A-R-A. And it's the word for God created. It doesn't have anything to do with us creating anything or procreation. It's what only God can do, creating from nothing. And it's really important. We looked at a couple of other verses that substantiate that, both in Romans and Hebrews. And I invite you to go look at those as well. So in Genesis, the first part, we see where God created matter. Then he created things from the matter he created. And we see that play out in the first 5 days of creation. And then in day 6, of course, he creates humans. So we'll see all of that play out. And we talked about how to picture this. And I picture it as a time, well, if you say, what did it look like? It was formless and empty, and God's Spirit hovered over the waters. How do you picture that? I don't know. I said it's like going into a space where everything is full of like a dark cloud. And that cloud contains all the matter, all the atoms, everything that is used to make things. Wade talked about how it's like a black canvas. It's a canvas that has everything in it. And then God on that canvas paints what he wants to be in our universe. Any way you think about that, I mean, we can't think of it in its true sense because our minds aren't big enough, but anything we can do to help us with that picture, I think is something we ought to take a look at. It is hard to understand. And I do think that as we look at this, we have to just come to grips with our finite mind. We can't understand everything about God. We're just going to have to accept some things on faith and also the way he wrote them. I did spend time as everybody was leaving last week on something called the gap theory. And I want to talk about that because there's another one in Genesis 3 and 4 that we need to talk about as well. And I'm going to use a chart to explain them. So I'm not going to go through each of them now, but the gap theory essentially says that between verse 1 and verse 2, billions of years transplaced and things happened. And I mentioned why I don't think it's true, and I'll mention that again when we get to the chart. But today we pick up in verse 3, and this is where we start today. And I'm going to get through probably verse 10, maybe verse 11 today, and the reason for that is what we see here is creation by day, but we also see a pattern in the creation cycle. And we'll talk about the pattern because the pattern is important. So God said, let there be light. Now, what is light? You know, light is visible light. We can see. I mean, we look in the light in here. The light comes from these lamps. It comes from the windows. And it's important to understand that darkness here is not a thing in and of itself. It is a thing that is the absence of light. So darkness is the standard condition, but when light comes, darkness is chased away. And it's the same as evil, by the way. Evil is the absence of good. And so, or the absence of God, if you want to look at it that way. So there's a lot of stark comparisons that are used both in the book of John in the first chapter and also in the Genesis chapter 1. So God said, let there be light, and there was light. Now, something you don't think about. God said, right? This is the first time we hear God's voice. I don't know what it sounded like. But let me ask you this. Who's he talking to? To light? He hadn't created it. He hadn't created light yet. Well, I'm going to tell you four things he talks to in Genesis. He talks to his creation in general, the big black board or the big black cloud. He talks to things that are created in his world, like the earth or the seas. He talks to man, and he talks to himself. It's important. I'm not going to make the point today, but I'm going to make it probably when we get to the sixth day. Who God addresses his words to is important to understand because it gives us some insight into the sources of life for us. So God said to his creation, let there be light. And what happened? Light appeared. Now, and God saw that the light was good. Now, good here is a term that is defined as meeting its purpose. God created light for a purpose. And when God saw that light was created and created the way he wanted it to be, he considered that good. So when you see good, it means it's created to be what God created it to be. Now we'll see in later verses that we'll see something's very good, which also means that, but it means that it's, I don't think it means it's better than he thought, but it means that he's really super pleased with what he created. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. Now I'm going to read these 10 verses, and then we're going to stop, and I'm going to go back to each little couple of the verses, talk about them individually. I don't want to do it here on this chart because I've got other charts to do that. So he called the light day, and the darkness he called night, and there was evening and morning the first day. So after all this, God said, let there be a vault between the waters to separate water from the water. Now, this is what we would call atmosphere. It separates the atmosphere from the water and the earth. But they call it a vault here. It's called heavens in some of your verses. Maybe in the King James, it's called heaven. God called the vault sky. There was evening and morning the second day. So we see in the second day what was created. And God said, let the water under the sky be gathered to one place and let the dry ground appear. And it was so. God called the dry ground land and gathered waters he called seas. And God saw that it was good. So when God said, let there be a vault, who's he speaking to? He's speaking to his creation. When he said, let the water under the sky be gathered to one place, Who's he speaking to? He's speaking to the water. And again, you look at this and you say, well, what's the big deal? He's talking, and whoever he wants to hear, hears. It is a big deal. At least I think it's a big deal when we get to the part about man, because I'll make that point when we get there. So if we take these at one at a time, these little couplets of verses. So God said, let there be light, and there was light, and God saw. So God said, God saw, and God determined that it was good. So God has three action words in what he's exercising for us. And so it also brings to mind the term day. What is day? And this is where we get off into the second theory called the day-time theory. Day is the Hebrew word yom, Yom Kippur, Day of Atonement, Yom Teruah, the Day of the Trumpets. Yom is a word that almost always means a 24-hour period. Although it doesn't always mean that, when you say the Day of the Lord, it's a time period. The Day of the Lord is a time period, not a single day. And so you have to look at the context of how the word is used to understand whether it's a 24-hour day or an era of time. But what happens is people who are trying to explain the scientific understanding that there are millions or billions of years from the time the earth came into being, however it came into being, until the time of a creation of plants and animals and all that, all these, I think I mentioned before, all these periods of history, the Pleistocene period and all these other periods. It's important to understand how to explain that away. So they do that through this day and time theory. So light here is the word ore in Hebrew. And it really just means to make luminous or to make bright. And it's used in terms of break of day, the gloriousness of day, to kindle something into fire, to lighten something. And it means visible light. It always means visible light. Darkness, again, two words represent darkness. One of them is Arafel, which is the term used in Genesis. And one of them is Chosek. And both of them mean an absence of light. But Arafel means a darker, more foreboding light. So that's the light that he's talking about in Genesis, the darkness of everything, the darkness of all matter of life. So it's just important to understand. Evening, of course, we understand is the time of what we would call dusk. It's the time of the beginning of night. The morning is the beginning of the interval of day. So, yes. I think we saw in Genesis 1 that the Spirit hovered over the waters. So hovering over the waters means that there, I mentioned that is hovering is like a movement and it's energy. So God used that energy to create light. Now, what is the source of the light? It's got to be God, because nothing else has been created yet.
Physical light that we have, what is that?
It's electrons. It's electrons that glow. I mean, from a physics perspective, sun is not created yet. Before the sun. He's got to be the light, because there's nothing else that could be the light at this point. The sun comes later, different day, which is one of the conundrums of Genesis, because we think, because we live in a world where our light comes from the sun or from an artificial source, we have a hard time understanding that there could be light without a sun. But if you take the Genesis record and its sequence, light is created before the sun is created. The only thing I can say is it's got to be God. God is the light. He is the light You know, we see that, of course, you know, we know that God is the light of the world. So we see that later on in the New Testament. But right now, that's all the light there is. There's nothing else created. The sun and the moon and the stars aren't here yet. They come later.
Is this light greater than the sun?
Well, I would assume so. It doesn't say that, but I would assume so. Don, you got a question? Well, I think out of the matter, God took what was in the matter and created visible light. And so there was something that was light. And that light he called day and morning. And the absence of that light is evening and it is night. Yeah, John. He could have. I don't know. I wouldn't limit him as to what he created. I would just say that it's a physical manifestation of light beyond our understanding. And maybe it's just an electromechanical thing or electromagnetic thing or whatever it is. But, you know, we've got things like LEDs, which when you got electricity over them, they glow. So maybe he built the first LED light and used it. I don't know. I mean, I'm just thinking out loud, but whatever it is, it's before the sun. That I know. Good. I think I told you that the Hebrew word is tov, and tov is a term that is means good, and hena tov means it's certainly good or very good, surely good. And so all of that is important as we look at these verses. So now I want to get to this day age theory. I'll show you a chart so you don't have to get too confused about this yet. But what this means is day one was a billion years long. Day two was a billion years long. Day three was a billion years long. So when you get to the time man's created, then the universe has been around for many billions of years. And that's how they correlate and justify the notions of science, time of science, with time, with the events of creation. And again, I think this was probably acceptable to some people in the 50s with the Scofield Bible, because these were all laid out in there as something that was possible. I talked about why I don't think they're possible, and I'll do that again when we get there. But here's the pattern. And, which means whatever God does, tacks onto the verse before, tacks onto the day before. God creates something. God examines it. God names it. He also proclaims that it's good. All in a day. And this day has defined limits. They're defined by a morning and an evening and light and darkness. So what you see here is a pattern that appears to include rotation of the earth. I didn't say that, but the rotation of the earth is rotating. And so we get dark half the time and light half the time. That's the way we would explain it today. But God created a sense of time here, a time for morning, a time for evening, a time for day, a time for night. So all of this is created in this first day of creation. And, or, you know, in day one, we see all of that. Now, I mentioned this earlier, God speaks to, I won't mention it again, but he speaks to his creation, to a part of his creation. He speaks to himself, or he speaks to mankind is what it really means, like Adam means mankind. So I'll make a point on that when we get to day six. I don't want to make it ahead of that, though. But I want you to try to figure it out. Figure out who he's talking to and why it's important, especially when it comes to man. Question. Could be. When he speaks to himself, he's speaking to that, for sure. Good thinking. Just keep going. Yeah, Vicki.
Don't tell Bob that.
Well, I think Genesis is exactly that. It's foundational for us. It gives us foundations for so many of our beliefs. And as you look at the New Testament and later Old Testament, you see where it all dovetails together. It's a perfect fit. And that's why a lot of people have a problem with the Bible. It looks like it was written, you know, with everybody coordinating everything. When in reality, God was the only one coordinating it, the Holy Spirit coordinating it. So this is the graphic I want to use to explain these two theories. So let's start at the bottom, the young earth theory. The young earth theory says, yeah, go ahead. In what theory? There's three theories here. I sort of believe the young earth theory. Yeah, I'm just telling you what's out there. But I believe the young earth theory because I think for a lot of reasons. But the young earth theory says, if you look over here, it says there's 6 days. And they're days like we think about 6 days. And then all the rest of the Bible finishes out here. So that's the thing that says the earth is 5,700 years old, which is the Jews would say we're in year 57, 56, or whatever it is. I don't remember exactly the year. But and that's called the young earth theory. If you go to the Creation Museum, Ken Ham, he believes in the young earth theory. He's got a lot of reasons why that is true. You think about dinosaurs, you think about the flood. He's got reasons to explain why those fit in to these times. I mean, the reality is we don't know what's true, but if we accept the Bible is true, we have to sort of go along with what the Bible says, especially if there's nothing to contradict it, and I don't think we see anything that contradicts it. The gap theory says that of the 6 days, all of this was created in the time between Genesis 1 and 2. So between Genesis 1 and 2, all these billions of years took place. And then we get to the 6 days, and they take place one day at a time. The day-age theory says, no, I don't believe in the gap between Genesis 1 and 2, but every day is a billion years. You know, it's not one day, it's a billion years. It's an epoch of time. So those are the three theories, and they really divide on where you make up the time. They're not, in the young earth theory says you don't have to make up the time because God could do it in one day if he wanted to. It didn't take him billions of years to do it. And the gap theory says, well, I'm going to place the gap between verse 1 and 2, and the other one says I'm going to place it on each day. So each day is going to be very, very long because they, of course, what they want is evolution within the day. So those are the three theories, and you'll hear those expressed by many people who dispute Genesis or accept Genesis. You know, some people accept the gap theory and accept Genesis. It's just that there's a couple of problems with that, which we talked about last time. Because the gap theory, let me just give you the reason that is important to me. Death doesn't come until after the fall in the garden. Death of plants, death of animals, death of humans. But if you believe the gap theory, you believe that millions of fossils have been on the earth forever. And that's how we determine this time, which then says, I don't believe that death came through Adam, which then says, I don't believe that death was called by the fall. And I don't believe that the world was perfect up until the fall. All of that is serious problems for a Bible scholar or for anybody who believes the Bible, because it really sets in motion a disbelief of the very foundational truths in the Bible. So I don't like any of these other two theories. I don't think they work. I think and Dr. Morris has many other reasons why he doesn't think they work. This is the one that jumps out to me of all of them. So that's the two theories. So let's move to day two. We did day one. So God said to his creation, let there be a vault or a firmament between the waters to separate water from water. So in the world we live in today, we have the atmosphere, we have the earth. Above the atmosphere, we have space. All of this is part of this creation. But this vault is what separates the earthly space from what I would call the ionosphere, or what's called the first heaven. You study heavens, it's called the first heaven, which is the first space that's created above us. It's what we breathe, the air we live in, and all of that, birds flying that. So God made this vault and separated the water, and it was so. So God just called it, and it happened. And he called the vault sky. It's the same word, by the way, as we talked about in verse 1 for heaven, and it's a plural word. So the King James translates it one way. The NIV translates it another. The Revised Standard translates it a different way. All of them are really set to say it's the space above earth. It's the sky is what we would call it today. And then he says there was evening and morning the second day. So in this creation, when he separates the vault, he creates the evening and the morning. So this is when we begin to see a sense of a real day, a time day. So in Job, the Bible tells us that the angels were present when the foundations of the earth were laid. So even though Genesis doesn't say it, they have to have been created in day one because they're part of his creation. And so when the heavens were created, the angels had to be created. If Job is to be believed, that the angels were there when the earth was laid. So people talk about when were the angels created and all that. So I do think they were created there. The word for heaven or sky is shemayim, which is the word for heaven. It's really the word for the space above the earth, plural space, plural. So it means the general term for atmosphere. So we begin to see here, and one of the things we have to be careful about in Genesis is the words they use mean something to us different than they meant to them, because they were written in a Hebrew and they meant something different than they do today. So if you've got a Strong's or one of those concordances that tells you what the word is, what it meant in the original Hebrew, it's a much better way to study this. Otherwise, we get caught up in the thing we always do. We read everything with our 21st century mindset. And really, the mindset can't be that. It's got to be the mindset of the time that God created it. And the words are used for that purpose. And the words are accurate words that are called out in the Hebrew. So that's kind of where we are at day two. So God spoke, matter began to move up, matter began to move down. So what appeared was a separation of the two. We've talked about that. All of the things that God needed for his creation now are in the matter he created in the first day. He spoke in light into existence. He separated from darkness, created day, night, and all those things. Now, he's defined day as both this time of light and also a time of measurement of time, an evening and a morning. So he's laid out now what is useful when you think about day, and where it's commonly translated all through the Bible in Hebrew, the word yom. It's the word that means a 24-hour day, although it can mean other things depending on its context. So all of the basics of earth and life have been created now. The atmosphere has been created. The earth has become to form together. It hasn't been separated yet. But all of that has happened now. And everything that's required for the establishment of life and further becomes necessary and comes in day three. So day three, we still don't have the sun yet. So day three, God said, let the water under the sky be gathered into one place and dry ground appear. So who's he speaking to here? He's speaking to the water. He's speaking to the water, and he's basically saying, gather in one place. Speaks to the water, and then he doesn't speak to the land here. He speaks to the water, and he says, you gather together. And what's left when you're not gathered is what I'm going to call land. And that's that word we talked about before, the Hebrew word, that doesn't mean earth in its sense. It means dirt, or it means the actual form of earth itself. And the gathered waters he called seas. So he gathered the water together and called it seas, and he gathered the land together and called it land. And God saw that it was good. Good, the same pattern. Said, called, saw. Always the pattern. Then, again, another transition word, God said, let the land produce vegetation. So who's he speaking to now? I've highlighted it to make it easy for you. He's speaking to the land. He's not saying to the sun, he's not saying to the sky, you produce vegetation. He's declaring it to the land. He says, I want you to produce vegetation, a specific kind of vegetation, seed-bearing plants and trees on the land that bear fruit with seed in it, according to their kinds. And it was so. Now, so think of a tree. A tree that has a fruit that has a seed in it. I mean, we think of a peach or whatever, you know, cherry tree or almonds or whatever. Those are seed-bearing plants. And remember later, God gives all the seed-bearing plants to us for food. But he's asking the earth now, or the land, to produce vegetation. So everything that comes out of, everything that becomes a plant or a vegetation comes from the earth. It comes from the source that he called to create it. That's a little clue. Comes from the source that he called to create it. And he called them according to their various kinds. Now, if you've ever been a gardener, and I know David, many of you have, if you want a corn plant, what do you plant? A corn seed. You know, if you want tomatoes, you don't plant a tomato seed. Usually you buy a tomato, but you know, beans, you plant bean, you can. Kudzu, I don't know. Kudzu came along somewhere in this transition, though.
Came out of the dark.
Came out of the dark. Yeah, he says it came out of the dark. But it's interesting here that even in Genesis, God is setting the stage for us to come. He's providing us food, providing us something to eat, and giving us instruction later on what to eat. But the earth is to produce seed-bearing plants and trees. And it was so.
And they did that from the light that emanated him.
From him. The land produced vegetation, plants bearing seed according to their kinds, and trees bearing fruit with seed in it according to their kinds. And God saw that it was good. Evening and morning, the third day. So the only point I'm trying to make here is that God has a particular sequence for these things. And obviously, the plants have to be here before we can eat them. Now, one of the people will say, well, okay, you plant a corn seed on day three, you can't eat it on day six. It hasn't gotten a corn plant. Well, who's to say that they created a plant from a seed? They may have just created the plant and then came the seed. So, you know, the chicken and the egg thing sort of comes into play. But if you read Genesis, they created the plants. And the plants were seed-bearing plants, produced a fruit that was seed-bearing. So it's just kind of interesting as you begin to lay these all out. So now we've got day three down. We're not going to finish all of them. But now this is there's so much in this day three. The third act of separation. So we separated light from dark. We've separated the firmament from the earth. Now we've separated the water and the land. And each portion of those defines another element of earth, another element of the sky. So God spoke to the water and it separated. God spoke to the land and it brought plant into existence. He also created them in kinds and the renewal within kinds. Again, you can certainly cross hybrid plants, but that's not the original design. I mean, even if you do, you know, you can have an apricot or you can have one of those little bitty tangelos or whatever. You can have all kinds of those kind of things, but they're all citrus fruits. You don't cross, you know, a corn plant with an apple tree. That, I mean, maybe you could, I don't know, but I don't think that'll work. A corn apple, yeah, that would be, doesn't sound too tasty to me. So all of that is important to me. And I think God saw it again, and he was pleased with his creation. So he said it was good. So all of this is kind of buried in this third day. If you think about when you read these verses, it's tempting just to read them and blow through them. But if you think about what he's done and what he came from and how it was created, it gives you a little more depth into God's plan for us and plan for the earth.
Everything God has created, this will continue, he created for a purpose. Obviously, it was
absolutely a purpose
to get to man. I mean, everything that he's created is for man, their use and purpose.
Right.
But everything along the way has a specific purpose. He created it to do something. And that's when he said, well, that's good.
Yes.
Just doing what I
Doing what I created it to do. So none of this is an accident to God. He didn't create plants and go, oops. You know, I'm still wondering about the mosquito a little bit, but I think the mosquito is food for a lot of birds. So that's probably why that's there.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then they would produce, and he never had to worry about them again.
They were self-fulfilling.
Except for man.
Worry about him all the time. Yeah. There's a couple of jokes in that, but I'll save those. I maybe won't do them later. But so now we come to day four. Okay, Bill, pay attention here. Day four. Let there be lights in the vault in the sky to separate from the night, separate the day from the night. Let them serve as signs to mark the sacred times and days and years. Now, I want to stop there for a minute. So he said he wants to create lights in the skies. But their first purpose is to serve as a sign. Remember when we talked about a lot of things we've talked about with signs, talked about prophecy. A sign is always a pointer to something else. Like I always say, if you go to Disney World and you come to the sign outside that says Epcot 2 miles. You don't get out and celebrate and picnic at the sign. The sign is just a pointer to something else. So the signs, the sun and the moon to come, are signs to mark the sacred times. We just finished studying God's appointed times. God made times for us to meet with him. And so he put the things in place to mark these times. And they weren't just an accident of Leviticus. They were there in the beginning to serve a purpose that God had for them. And it also set the time of the days and years. So again, we begin to see the concept of time now begin to move from days to something called a year, which is, of course, a cycle of days. Now, in the Jewish world, they use lunar cycles. And so there's 360 days in their lunar year. We use a different method, 365 and a quarter. But this is the way God laid it out. And so these two great signs, these two great lights are signs. Verse 15, and so in addition to being signs, they're also let them be lights in the vault of the sky to give light on the earth. So their primary purpose for God was to create them to be signs. Secondarily, they were to provide light. So we think of them as the light bearers that we have. It says God made two great lights, the greater light to govern the day, the lesser light to govern the night. He also made the stars. So at this point, not only are the stars made, but the sun and the moon are made as well. He sets them in the vault of the sky to govern the day and night and to separate light from darkness. And God saw that it was good. Again, now we see, we don't see evidence here of the earth rotating around the sun or the sun rotating around the earth as they used to think in old science. But we do see evidence that between the sun and the earth, there's a cycle of day and night. Somebody's rotating around something. And we see that called out here. Now, it takes us many thousands of years for astronomers to uncover the real universe and what's the majesty of what God created. But he's created it here. We begin to see it being created here. So God set them in the vault of the sky to give light on the earth, to govern day and night, separate light from darkness, and God saw that it was good. Evening and morning, the fourth day. The other thing I'll point out is in Hebrew, a day starts at dusk and ends at dusk. So it runs from the beginning of evening to the end of day the following day. That's why Passover starts in the evening. That's why Yom Kippur starts in the evening, because they follow the pattern that was laid out in Genesis of a day. It's not morning and night. It's not day and night. It's really night and day. I mean, we've turned that on its head. We think of a day in a different way, and that's sometimes hard when we try to understand a biblical explanation, because all of the biblical explanations are based on the Hebrew days, starting at dusk and ending at the end of day or dusk the following day. Fourth day. So God said to who? God said to his creation. He said to all of the creation. So all of this comes out of what God has created. And the only point I want to make here, and hopefully we'll get to it on the sixth day, is the source that God calls on has an important bearing on each thing he created. Another hint. So just think about that. I've given you too many hints. It's going to be easy for you to figure out. So the sun and the moons are created. They're created as signs. I mentioned that all along. And then they were created to provide light on the earth. So I should have put this slide up before I did all the explanation, but I didn't. So it's in here. It's in here if you want to look at it when you look at slides. I'm going to stop here because I'm a little early, but I also don't want to do the next 2 days, because the next 2 days I need to take in sequence, because they're real important to take together. And then day seven, of course. So any questions so far about what we've done? I know some of this is hard to get your mind around because it's so different from the way we think in our world today.
If we knew all of the details that God knows, it would make most of what we look for.
Right.
Instead of a person. But, you know, the power of just one atom, photon, neutron, electron, three parts, just that power alone to how a seed has coded inside it, it knows to be an apple tree, it knows to be a corn.
Right.
How? All of the details of God coded every little thing. And then all of creation, from the plants and everything else, are dependent on God for life, not the sun, like the world.
Right.
All these things were created, and God gave them all life, and the power comes from God to be alive and divine. But the world says, oh no, the sun and the moon and everything else are all has its own power, and it's all existing upon the Creator, or who made every little thing from the coding of the seed to the way it's wired and lived.
Yeah, that's right. And what he's making the point is that God is encoded in every little atom that we have as to what we're to be. And, you know, we call them stem cells in our body, right? You have a stem cell and it knows what it's supposed to be. And so, you know, there's some hope for regrowing organs through stem cells because they know what they're supposed to be. But a plant, a corn seed, knows it's a corn. It knows it's not a green bean. So it's kind of amazing. It needs water and it needs sun, but the germ of life is into what God made. The germ of life is in the seed that it produces. Yeah, there's so much of this science-wise that is in this book, of course, but you know, it's very detailed to go through. But again, if you're interested in that, I would recommend you take a look at it. Yeah, Julie.
Yeah.
Right. You couldn't hear that, but Julie made the point that, you know, science in its normal course of business tries to undermine Genesis, because if they accept Genesis, then they have to accept that God created it. They have to accept all the things that come with a God in the world. And I think those are things that science won't take. And that's the whole science of humanism, right? We're our own God. We create everything that we have. I'm going to take you to an order. Go ahead, Carol.
I just wanted to mention
chapter speaks about life a lot, and he mentioned earlier who God speaking to, and he said man. That he was looking way down the way, because one thing that light does is reveal. It enables
right.
us to discover. And without it, we wouldn't see anything. We wouldn't know anything.
No, that's a fact. Revelation comes through seeing and understanding through light, through the Spirit also. But
scientists are out there now, they'll tell you that they don't really understand all the properties of light. It acts like a particle. It acts like a wave.
Right.
They call it photons. They don't know what a photon is. And there's a lot of things about light they still don't understand.
Yes. If we based our biblical beliefs on the science of 800 AD, flat earth, everything else, that would be a huge mistake. The same thing with basing it on the science of today. Science will learn over time what's accurate and what's not. Jeff, you have a question? Yeah. Well, I think that's a rhetorical question, you know, because they ask that, but they can certainly define it when it comes to women's things. You know, whether it's abortion or whether it's playing a soccer team or whatever. So it's just another way to confuse people, I think. And yeah, good point. Yeah.
And you're trying to get yourself pretty good.
I do that every morning.
The light of the sun is shining through the window, and you look in that mirror, and you think, oh my. You look at all these blemishes. So God's light, think how magnifying it is, and he shows us the blemishes and the things that we need to make right.
Yep, good point. Good point. Pamela, you had a question.
No, I was trying to, I don't, I, it's changing the subject.
Okay.
So this has been so glorious talking about Genesis and God's intention and how beautiful creation is. I don't want to spoil that. So if we're done talking about that, I just wanted to say one thing about the God of Scripture.
Let me make one point to follow up on the one before. Did you ever notice when you got an HDTV? Now you can see the newscasters and you can see every hole in their chin and every bump on their face. You ever notice that? I mean, that's the light that God, he sees right through us, every blemish, every fault. We get a glimpse of it with HDTV, but you know, you want to go back to the old fuzzy TV where you don't see all that. Yeah, now we're off that subject. Go ahead. Yeah, makeup. Yeah, that's right.
But I want to share that All Israel News, they posted last night a video of a reporter going into the Gaza Strip and going into what's left of the people they're trying to get out. And those people are against Hamas. They are saying, thank you, Jews, for coming and getting us. They are praising the Jews for trying to rescue them. They want the end to the terrorists. They want to support Israel. It's a beautiful, it's like a 25 minutes of kids interviewing, and they're starving, they're wanting water. The women are declaring that they've come and taken their children, they've taken their sons, they don't know where they are. It's just a beautiful thing, and I wish that the world could see these are Palestinians, these are people from the Gaza Strip who are declaring that these people are terrorists and that Israel is good, Israel is the hero. And I wish some of these college students.
Well, it'll be there, but they won't look at it. You know, that's the sad part of it. There are people in Israel, you know, the Druze and many of the Bedouins are Arabs, but they're not hostile to Israel. You know, they think Israel has protected them. And so I do hope that comes out. Pamela mentioned that on Joel Rosenberg's All Israel News, there's a video that came out last night talking about interviews with Palestinians in Gaza who are thankful that Israel came and hopeful to get their own government. I hope that turns out to be the case. I do. There was another question over here, another comment? Okay. So let's have a word of prayer, and then we'll close for the day. Lord, thank you for this time. Thank you for your words in the book of Genesis. Lord, help us as we read it to not jump ahead, but to look at what you're doing in the day and time and try to understand all that it really means to us. Lord, have your spirit work in our hearts and our minds to help us see the glory of your creation. Lord, I am thankful for all the people that are here today. I pray for our country. I pray for Israel. I pray for all the people that are ill or facing surgeries or recovering from surgeries. Lord, I just pray that you be with them in a special way. I also pray for the pastor as he speaks today, a sermon that has been anointed by you. I pray he speaks it in power and speaks it to make inroads into our very hearts and minds. Lord, I pray all this in the blessed and holy name of Jesus Christ. Amen. Thank you all. They're created when the animals are created. You're welcome. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim.
Thank you.